Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another Grayscale Gorilla podcast, episode 58. And today, it is a beautiful day here in the Chicagoland area and in the Michigan area, I believe, right? It's pretty nice there.
It's gorgeous.
It's the first nice day of the year, effectively.
Yeah, it's just been great, man. 70s, breeze coming in. It's gorgeous.
Jealous.
Happy to be here with you. As always, we've got Mr. Chris Schmidt.
Hello, hello.
And Mr. Nick Campbell.
Happy Monday, everybody.
Yes, it is actually. When it's nice outside and you know you can go outside and not freeze your ass off, then it is a good Monday. Very good. Well, lot to talk about. A lot of news came around this last week. I do feel obligated, though, to start off this podcast by talking about a little practical joke that we played on people for April Fool's Day, one in which I decided it would be funny to convince people that Nick was buying a PC and then at the same time convince people that I was buying a Mac. And it worked pretty well, I gotta say. There was quite a few people that caught it right away, but I did it pretty early enough in the morning where I think people weren't really sure. They hadn't checked their calendars yet, and it was just kind of one of those things.
April Fools.
Oh, yeah. You fooled me for a second. I wasn't in on it.
Yeah. And so it was kind of a spur of the moment thing. And then when Nick found out about it, he like immediately like helped it out by saying like, I forget what you tweeted, something about I'm nervous or something.
Just the guy. I wanted to add a little authenticity to your lie. Yeah.
No, it worked out perfectly because I had quite a few people, for me at least, going like, oh my God, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this? This makes no sense. And then, I'm still getting tweets about this, and the people are like, people that follow me are replying for me saying, dude, just look at the date that he sent that. Like, this is not, you know, this isn't
what he sent. It was good timing too, because, speaking of other news, Mac announced that they're going to reboot the Mac Pro, which got a ton of feedback. I know our industry has been yelling about the Mac Pro and Mac dropping the ball on us artists for a long time. And so that was pretty big news in our industry, and it kind of happened right around there. So
I'll take full credit for that, by the way. All it took was me saying that I was going to buy one. That's all it took.
And Apple was like, all right, we're back on board then.
It brought Chad. Yeah. Once Chad was really, really giving him the heat, they decided, wow, we should really get this guy back.
But no, that is kind of crazy though, right? It's crazy timing.
There is crazy timing. But like I didn't super read up on it, but wasn't effectively, you correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't effectively, hey, here at Apple, we realize that we dropped the ball on the Mac for a long time and we're going to think about redesigning it and we're going to be aiming to make it more modular. Is that pretty much the extent of the details right now?
Yeah, yes. That's it pretty much.
And yeah, it won't be out till next year at least.
Yeah, so it's a ways away. I'm super skeptical of this. Like, no one would be happier than me if Apple came out with some kick-ass hardware to go with their pretty sweet OS. Like, and we've always been willing to pay a decent premium for like getting the best hardware from Apple. They just haven't allowed us to do that in a long time.
Right.
But when they came out with what is either lovingly referred to or jokingly referred to as the trash can, they were saying, hey, we know we're behind and don't worry, we haven't forgotten about you and we're going to keep up with this. And then they didn't. And that was when everybody was already starting to get skeptical of them. So now they're doing it again.
To take Chad's abusive relationship analogy, this is the part where the person comes back and says, no, honestly, this time I'm okay.
I've changed.
That's a big question mark.
Yeah.
And you're like the person who's like, you want to believe it so bad. You're just like, maybe they mean it this time. Like, maybe this is real. I don't know. And
yeah, a lot of people ask me specifically because I've been kind of the big, I wouldn't say canary in the coal mine because I'm the last one. Like, everyone else is
already official when you do it.
Yeah, but a lot of people have been asking me about the news, and it's just hard with any news that's not a real thing. If it's a guess, or I'll say it this way, it's hard to make decisions based on things that are not out yet.
It's a promise to the future.
Yeah, it's always hard to do that. And I know, like, when I was younger, I used to have to time that out because I was a broke college student and I always wanted the best bang for my buck. So I had to wait for the max cycles to hit and then buy the second best one, like basically buy the best one that was the best the day before the new ones came out, but at a significant discount. Like, I had to play those games because I was broke and I was trying to like get eke as much power as I could, as many megahertz as I could get my hand on it for those years. But now that, you know, now that we're frankly, like, we're running a business here, like, we can't make decisions based on guesses in the future. We have to get the stuff we need to do the work today. So if literally the thing came up that I needed a bunch of power tomorrow, I'd be calling my friends to help me build a PC. That would have to happen. Wow. Because of where, you know, what we're doing, what I do most days, which is, you know, hop on phone calls right now and just getting a lot of stuff planned. There's not a lot of heavy, heavy lifting right now, which lets me skate through this kind of, this non-power version of Macintosh, pretty safely. I also have, you know, Team Render set up. So when I do need the power, it's there. I can, and I don't have a client yelling at me, so I could leave it overnight if I really need a render done. But just to catch everyone else up, I'm definitely interested. I think Chris said it best. We would love, at least Chris and I would love for Mac to take care of us forever. I want that giant Mac hug for all times, and I'll pay to get it. But if they're not going to provide it for us in a timely manner, like, it's gonna come upon us pretty quickly.
Yeah, where, I think, you know, I'm guessing it'll be like 18 months before anything is really kind of solidified. And even then you're left wondering, like, okay, well, are we going to get updates between now and the time that it announces? Like, are we going to find out if it's NVIDIA friendly? Are we going to find out that it's upgradable? Or, you know, what are we going to give these people something more to go on than just the word modular? I know, it's just such a, and
well, it's smart on their point of view,
I guess.
But there's an additional layer here, which is, like, I typically don't jump in on the first generation of something. I typically wait until like the second generation when they can work out all the bugs. Yeah. And Apple's so far behind on their hardware that I feel like, let's say a year from now, 18 months from now, if they come out with something and it seems pretty good, there's still going to be some bugs to work out because they just have so much catching up to do that I would want to wait for second gen. So it's going to be like another year after that.
Like, no, I know. You're right. And it's hard to justify. And you know, it'll come at a huge premium, too. It's just the way that they work.
Well, which is potentially fine if it's kick-ass hardware,
I guess. But now, I mean, I just read an article not too long ago that put the top-of-the-line trash can that you can buy right now up against like a $1,500 Ryzen chip machine. So it was like a $5,000 Mac up against a $1,500 PC, and they did some benchmarks in Photoshop and Cinebench, and this, you know, $1,500 machine was kicking its ass. And like, you gotta wonder, like, okay, well, there's a huge premium that came with a lot of markup happening for the amazingly beautiful industrial design and whatnot, and at some point you're gonna have to make that decision internally, like, how much am I really willing to pay for that amazing industrial design to have Johnny Ive's handprint on it? And where do I want to put my money? Like, do I want to put
I feel like you're jumping ahead a step, because that's not even the question until that hardware is comparable. Because right now you're getting the beautiful design, but you're years behind on the hardware. So that's not even a conversation right now. So this is more a conversation year or two from now. Yeah. Like, okay, now they've got the beautiful machine, and hopefully it's comparable in power, if not better.
If in 18 months they come out with a really amazing, like, upgradable system that runs beautifully and looks great and is quiet and all these things, I'll even consider buying one if the price isn't like gouging, you know, isn't a gouging price point. I would consider it just because it's a nice idea to be able to go to a website, have very simple, easy to choose components, and have it delivered to your door or go pick it up at a store and not have to worry about assembling it, finding the right drivers, power supplies, you know, bugging out. Like, you know, there is something nice about a completely turnkey system. I get that. I've never had that. So I am jealous of people that buy an iMac and just plug it in and it starts working. I mean, that's great. I mean, that's not a normal thing for me. But if I could get that, I'll try it out. But we'll see. I mean, 18 months is a long time.
Yeah. I feel bad for anybody who's in the market right now, I guess is my point. Sure. Because, man, what a tough decision. Like, it's a gamble. It's a gamble for who knows what. Just so I guess wait it out or don't. You can't speak to it.
I know. Let's see. In other news, we've got, I don't know, like we didn't talk about this before the show, but I did, I don't know if anybody's checked out the Maxon Labs. You guys have checked that out before, right?
Yeah, I popped in there. I saw something was new in there, right?
Yeah, they've got I haven't even really played with it yet, so I don't have much to say about it, but there is some cool Python things in there that just popped up that I thought were interesting. And I also think that the idea of Maxon Labs is pretty cool. A place for people to kind of like try out new ideas that may or may not make it into the app, which is interesting. I like that because it shows that they're kind of into this idea of, I don't know, experimentation and all that sort of neat stuff. And what I'm talking about is the Pi parametric tools.
Yeah, it's all the basic modeling tools as generators.
Yeah, so I haven't played with it yet. I'm going to play with it because it sounds amazingly fun. For those of you that don't really understand what they mean by parametric Pi modeling tools, Chris, why don't you explain it in a way that I would struggle with?
Well, I haven't read up on it much.
I don't understand it at all. You need to help me, Chris.
I mean, in the same way that forever in Cinema 4D, we've had a bevel tool. You select an edge and you bevel it as a modeling procedure. But then they made the bevel deformer. So you can now do that bevel procedurally after the fact. And then you can go back to your original mesh and nothing's been destroyed. So there's just a collection of parametric tools where you get like extrudes and inner extrudes. And it looks like also bevel, although I think we've kind of already got that. But I haven't even looked into it. And you can, just go and do a little bit of procedural modeling. And that kind of thing can be really useful. I know right now we have the MoExtrude, which is like the only way of doing that somewhat parametrically. Gorgeous looking things. Like if you want to do some of those weird abstracty pieces like David makes, like the locked and loading, where it's like a little blob and then it kind of extrudes in and it goes deeper and you want to blob the original mesh, like you have to be able to do it parametrically like this. So that's pretty intriguing, but I haven't gotten to play with him yet, so I can't speak to him too much.
Yeah, the idea is really
made sense, Chris.
It's very similar to how 3ds Max works. It's because 3ds Max has a very non-linear parametric modeling workflow, and so does Houdini. So this is kind of interesting. I want to play with it and see how it works because I've been missing that ability to kind of not commit on certain modeling functions in my workflow.
I could see also, I could also see some new ways to animate stuff that would have been tricky in the past if it's all if it's all destructive and it's all like just you model things out. Imagine now like stacking these up as if they're MoGraph modifiers in a way. And maybe I'm thinking about this wrong, so let me know. But it almost looks like it's MoGraph modifiers for modeling is maybe a way you could say it. That a dummy like me could understand it.
Except
and
you don't
so
feed
it looks
it
like you could bevel, right? But you feed it like, okay, I want you to extrude this way, and then it looks like you could add bevels. You could add all these. Let's see here. Yeah, some really cool caps. All these things, and then what I'm imagining is if you go in later and try to maybe animate this stuff or change it, it gives you a lot more. Non-destructive way to experiment with this stuff. Looks
well, you
pretty cool.
You cannot keyframe an extrude right now because an extrude is a tool. It's something you go and you commit into the model. Where here, you could probably, I haven't done it, but you could probably animate the extrude distance, and now it's going to be able to be animated. So there are very, very good reasons for that type of tool to exist. And after Maxon went and made the bevel tool, which is amazing, and I use it all the time for so many things, like I would actually kind of love to see all those tools broken out. You know, I want to be able to do it as a modeling technique, but I also want to be able to do it parametrically when it calls for it.
Right. Yeah, this is cool. It's multi-threaded, that would be even better.
Well, of course.
Of course.
Multi-threading is no trivial thing. In fact, no. We just multi-threaded out something of ours for the first time ever.
Oh, like, yeah. Whoa, breaking news.
It's not out yet, but we do have multi-threading in some of the upcoming stuff we're working on.
What?
Dude. That's good. Stay tuned for more news on that. Maybe we'll be breaking some news at NAB. Who knows?
That's right. That's coming up. Just over 2 weeks from today, we'll be... Or actually, I think it starts Monday, right? So we'll be in Vegas 2 weeks from today, at our booth, which is right next to the Maxon booth. And for those of you asking too, just find the Maxon booth and we'll be right next to it. A lot of people are asking for our booth number and all that stuff. So come say hi.
Maxon's one of the big signs, so find them. You like hanging out.
It'll be easier to find them.
We'll be the people wearing tuxedos and lots of gambling chips in our...
Oh, nice. I'm bringing
my grayscale shirt, so, you
there
know,
you go.
It track us down.
All be wearing that. We're going to look dorky.
Oh, heck no. Fine with,
maybe I'll wear my old school one, because everybody's going to be wearing the new ones.
Oh, there you go.
I plan on wearing a business suit, because I want to appear very... I want to look like a hotshot.
Are we doing our Dumb and Dumber?
We got to do that cool thing like Matthias where we got like a cool band t-shirt or something. So we'll get the grayscale grill shirt and the sports jacket on over it. Little bit of both.
And then I'm going to walk around all the different booths, scratching my chin saying, yes, tell me more and see if I can get like a free stress ball or something for my kids.
They're everywhere. Dude, I really, my new favorite piece of swag is little cubes, just those foam cubes, because I cannot stop playing with them. Like I use it, I put my phone down on them on my desk because it's not, now the camera's not resting on the wooden surface, or they're in the kitchen, you just kind of squeeze them. I found out you can sink them in water and they absorb water really well, and then you have to squeeze it all on.
Top tapping your mic would be great. We'll buy you as many of those as you want.
Yeah, foam stuff. I moved all the stuff away for me tapping the mic, so that shouldn't happen today. You know, the only thing in my left hand is my little microfiber thing, so I can't be there.
Nice. Nicely done. So
hopefully that won't make too much noise.
Well, the only last thing I wanted to mention is, and it just kind of came to me too, because I was looking at my Twitter feed here, and there's an interview with two of my favorite Joes up on Motionographer. Joe Donaldson interviewing Joe Ball, two guys that I used to work with back at DK, very talented cats, and a great interview with Joe Donaldson actually interviewing Joe Ball, who was recently promoted to director position at PSYOP.
Oh, wow.
And they're two super cool guys, really nice people, and it's a great interview. You should go check it out.
Is there any Render Wars news, or is that
the
all?
The Render Wars continue. Arnold 5 is close. I've been seeing a lot of teasing going on their Twitter account for Arnold 5. So they've been definitely building awareness. I don't have an official, as I'm on the beta, they don't give me the release date or anything like that. And even if they did, I couldn't say it. But based on how much they're marketing, I would say it's got to be close to being done, which is exciting. I've been on it for a while, and it's exciting. That's all I can say. What else is going on in that world? Let's see. No, there's really not much. I mean, Redshift announced that they're going to support Mac hardware for Redshift. Obviously, when I say that, I mean, obviously you still have to have an NVIDIA graphics card because it is a CUDA based renderer. But if you have a cheese grater Mac and you've got some NVIDIA hardware in there, you'll be able to run Redshift, which is good news for a lot of people, I think. Other than that,
I have a little piece of news. Actually tomorrow is Chad Ashley's 1 year anniversary of working with Grayscale Gorilla.
Woo!
Wow. Give it up. Thank you. Dude, you made it a whole year.
I did it.
You made it. Oh, this, I thought we were in a pier for a second. I was going to do like the little balloons floating or something. but Google doesn't give us any animations here.
They used to have these great things. You could like track things on people's faces and stuff, but they took it away for some reason. Yeah, thanks, guys. I'm really stoked, man. I'm glad I made this big decision about a year ago to leave DK and come on board at GSG and work from home. And it's been, I think there hasn't been too many things that I would consider to be really big life-changing moments. They kind of come and go, maybe get like 5 or 10 throughout your life. And this was definitely one for me because it not only changed the way that I live my life, basically, but it also changed my perspective a little bit more. And I think that I was at a point in my life where I needed that, and it came at a good time, great opportunity, the ability to be with my family more, be more involved in what I love to do, which is all things 3D. And it's just been great. So thanks, man.
Dude, it's been awesome to have you here. You know, if those of you out there have been seeing a ton more, you know, third party rendering tutorials with a little bit more, well, I'll say a lot more style to them. All the great looking things that have been popping up in the last year or plus, actually, is mostly this guy. So I really appreciate it, man. It's been awesome.
It's been awesome having you here.
Appreciate it.
Chris, did we ever figure out an official day for you? I feel like the way that we worked together early on, there was no official date.
There's a date on the calendar for my official start, but like it was such a non day.
It was like it's more of a paperwork day.
Yeah, it was a paperwork day because I'd already been doing full-time grayscale gorilla stuff for like 5 years. And then we're like, all right, let's make it official.
Yeah. We got to go back to maybe your first podcast or your first tutorial you did.
Yeah.
Maybe when City Kit came out, or I don't know, we got to go find a more personal like start day. Cause you're right. Yeah. It's just kind of on the calendar. We need to get balloons for you too, man.
Yeah. Cause first day of bomb camp. I don't know.
Yeah. There's a lot of different ones. We'll have to figure this out and put it on the calendar. Well, this that might be a little inside baseball, guys, but it's important to me that as this team grows, that we have the people at Grayscale Gorilla that could teach from different levels and about different things. And that's been really exciting for me personally, having somebody like Chris around that is so technically savvy and knows so much and is a good teacher. And then to be able to have Chad come in, which is also a great teacher. He's been my mentor throughout a lot of my career. And his stuff looks amazing. So like extra bonus there too. So like, it's just been really cool to have different angles, be able to come in here and make tutorials, help make products. We all come at it from a slightly different angle. And I think at the end makes the final tutorial, the final product, the final training series better by having all of our different angles on it rather than just from one. So I appreciate it, guys.
Man, woo. I think we need a high five to the camera right now. Yeah. All right, virtual high five. All right, people are getting probably sick to their stomach with all this happiness.
Talking about should we give away awards maybe for ourselves?
I don't know. I guess maybe let's pat ourselves on the back.
MVP.
Yeah. Well, let's get down to business. The topic we have today is one that I think comes up quite a bit, and it's a good topic because I think it affects people that have been doing it for a long time and people that are kind of new to motion design. And the topic is, does the tool make the artist, or does the artist make the tool? Does it matter what tools you have? Can you still make good stuff with bad tools? All, you know, the old tool discussion. And we have an interesting perspective on this as a maker of tools. Of course, we want people to understand their value and what they bring to the table. But I am curious to go around and see what you guys think about this topic, because it is kind of it can be one of those topics where you could either fall on either side, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'll start just by adding maybe a little bit more framework around it, as I like to do, try to make it more complicated. you know, when I hear people ask about tools, it's often the more beginner people that ask more about tools than people that have been doing it for longer. And so my general thoughts about tools is dependent on where it comes from. Anytime early on in a career or early on in learning things, I'm always struck by how easy it is to fall into the technical side of stuff. So I'll just put I'll put an analogy to it. If you're just getting started playing guitar, it's often easy to fall into like what amp and what guitar and what stomp box and what fuzz pedal and what wah pedal to get to like sound like Jimi Hendrix or whoever your hero is, right? And the answer you always get from people that have done that for a long time is, dude, don't worry about it. Just pick up a guitar and start practicing, because that is going to make the difference. I think there's always an analogy with cameras too. When digital cameras were just starting to be big, and I was, you know, the way Grayscale Gorilla started was a photo blog, and I was posting a photo a day, and so many people asked me what camera I used. And, you know, I totally understand both sides of that question. Because when I started doing photography, I was like, I need to get the perfect camera or else I'm just going to waste my time. If I don't have the proper tool to go out and take photos, well, what use is it anyway? And by the way, it's fun to go buy cameras and fun to go research and fun to go do all that. But ultimately, the reason people that have been in any industry for a long enough time will look at you and go, just get started and stop worrying about what tools you have and what computer you have, is because they're right. If you don't actually put the time in to practice what you're doing, it really doesn't matter. So, you know, I just want to set the frame up to maybe a bit larger than just Cinema 4D. With anything new that you're trying to tackle, at what point should you start to think about tools, and should you at all?
That's a really interesting angle, and that's extra interesting to me, because over the last 2 weeks I've been thinking about just picking up a decent camera of some sort. I'm not a photographer person. Like, I don't know the terminology. Like, I barely know focal length now because of Cinema 4D. But I figure having a camera would be a good way to go. And I don't know anything about hardware or any of the stuff. So we had a couple, you know, we have a couple people in Chicago who are really big on camera. So I asked them online what they think in the Slack channel. And the two of them started like getting really detailed, and they're asking me all these really specific questions, and they're like, are you more worried about this? Are you worried about this? Are you worried about being able to interchange all these lenses? And it's like, guys, I don't know any of this stuff. The point of this is, you guys are experts. I want a good kind of like everyday walk around camera that I can get my feet wet with. And like, they keep on asking me, and I mean, to their credit, but they're asking me, what do I want? What do I want out of it? And I'm pretty much like, I don't know what I want. I just want to dive in. So literally, like, here's kind of the budget I'm looking for. Anything you recommend in this category, I will buy and will be happy with. And maybe 2 years from now, if I get into it, I can like double down and get something fancier. But like, there's no reason for me to get super research or testing of this stuff. Here's the budget. Here's what I want to do. Recommend me something and I will start playing.
I think we could almost call this podcast a wrap, because what you're saying is exactly what I try to put across, and you're saying it a much better way than I can sometimes, because I ramble. But you won't know what you need until you get started. I think that to me was the secret sauce for all these things. Is if you don't, you know, I grew up obsessed with music, and I loved playing guitar and piano and all this stuff. And if I obsessed over what piano to get and all these things, I would have never made the strides to understand that ultimately I needed what I needed. So in other words, Chris, you're absolutely right. You should go start taking photos right now. You should go take your iPhone out and go start taking photos, because you're going to learn things as you do it and say, wow, I really wish I had a camera that did this and the iPhone doesn't do this. So that'll actually influence your decision-making process, because now you have a little bit of skin in the game. You have some experience using something that isn't perfect, so that now you could at least say what you need in the next thing you're purchasing. So for me, you also have to bring in budget to this conversation, because I think when people ask, do you need this, a lot of times what they're asking is, you know, that's an expensive thing to me right now in my career. Do I absolutely need to buy this to do the work I want to do? Or can I skip this? Or can I get a similar look with something else? Mm-hmm. So I don't know, maybe that's adding another layer to this that makes it even more gray. But two questions, Chad. When should people start thinking more about tools? And second, how do you divvy up a budget, especially with somebody just starting, and put that budget in the right place?
That's a good question. I agree with what you guys are saying about, you know, being, it is kind of a new person question that I think comes up a lot, because they're looking for that leg up. They're looking for that ability to kind of raise their game up faster. And sometimes people think that plugins or tools will help them do that. And sometimes they're right. Sometimes a plugin can do that for you. So there's always that. But, you know, when you start, I think you should start to think about when to introduce tools when you've got a really clear foundation of the work that you're doing. And let's just use, we'll just stick with the photography thing, I guess. Once you buy that first camera that gets you over that hump, and you start to understand how cameras work, and then it becomes more about, and it's kind of difficult to explain, but it's more about like, how do I go from here, what's in my head, to physical world, whether it's a photograph you have in your mind, a render, an animation, a design, like what's impairing that path from in your head to out on the page or out on the screen? Is it your knowledge of the camera? Okay, well then get a camera and learn it, and learn how focal lengths work, learn what lenses do, what effects they give you, because that's going to give you the knowledge you're going to need. So when you come up with that really cool idea for a photograph, you'll actually know how to go make it. Okay. So there's that aspect of it. Like, I totally agree. Just jump in, get started learning. That's always a good idea. I think when you get to a point where you have the idea in your head for that awesome photograph, and you're holding a camera in your hands that just can't do it, that's when you need tools. That's when you have to say, okay, well, I have this really great idea for this thing, and I know exactly, like, I want to make it, but my tool won't let, or my software or my camera or whatever doesn't offer that. It won't do that for me. I'm going to have to add something, a lens, a filter, or something. That's when you're going to want to do that. And it's really, you can hit that early or you can hit that late, depending on what you're using. If it's a 3D program, most of them are pretty flexible. Like, you can get a lot of different looks if you're crafty. But there are certain things that if you want to do in 3D that you just can't do without a plugin. The other reason you might bring a tool into your workflow is because you know you have the idea in your head. And again, you want to go from your brain to the page or the screen as fast as possible. And your camera can do it, but it just does it in a really janky way that takes a lot of time. And as you grow in the profession, your time becomes more valuable, yada, yada, yada. Therefore, you need a tool to speed up that process. And that's when a tool becomes really a valuable piece for the professional, where they maybe they have a particular task that they need to do over and over again, or they need to offer their client multiple versions, and tools can help them do that. And so, yeah, I think it's they don't make the artist, but they can make your life easier.
Yeah, I'll just add two physical examples of what you just mentioned, because I like both of those. The first one was physically that the camera can't do it, or whatever you're trying to do is impossible because you don't have the tools. I think in cinema land, that might be something like X particles. That might be something like a new renderer that you need that specific look. And then you literally, because of experience, you look at it and go, I can't do this unless I buy RealFlow, for example. Okay, now I could do this look. There it is. And then other things, like the speed up process, you're exactly right. That's another great reason to get tools. And in that way, you almost have to look at it like a screwdriver versus a power drill. Like, a battery powered drill and a screwdriver basically do the same thing. But you're going to be able to do it much faster with the drill, obviously. And so the reason people carry those around in their tool belt is because they're constantly using it. And every time they do it, they don't have to manually do it, and it's just done. I think in cinema land, that is stuff like HDRI Studio Rig or Leica Pro, or even these labs tools that give you something that you could do, but it's going to speed up the process, and it's going to allow you to be more flexible creatively. So I don't know if that added anything.
Makes sense. And I'll you know, to kind of like ride on your screwdriver analogy, it's like a screwdriver. You could probably go to Home Depot and get a really cheap one for like $2 or $3 or something. But that nice, I don't even know the brands, but like some nice, awesome drill might cost $100. And so when you're walking into the store, you're like, well, yeah, I could get this like $2 screwdriver. But again, I'm a professional, you know, mechanic or something. This is how little I know about tools. Like, I'm either going to buy that and like want to kill myself after, you know, and only being able to do so many, you know, screw so many things in a day, or I'm going to spend the $100 knowing that I'm going to make that money back in time saved by just like, you know, doing what I need to do. So
you get that crippling, you get like that restriction at the beginning. Like if you don't know what you're doing, if you're even moving into a new subject that you don't know much about, one of the most dangerous things or most crippling things is knowing that you don't know anything about a topic and not knowing the right questions to ask right away. But you can apply that to tools in any kind of sense where it's like, oh, okay, I'm going into this and I want, because one day in the future, I might want to do this thing. So I want to have the tools that can do everything, but crippling yourself and stopping yourself from moving forward because you're looking for that perfect tool, that perfect thing. What if I do the wrong thing and it doesn't work out? I like that. That can be really that. I think that's more dangerous than really any alternative. Like you want to go and just get the tool that can work for right now. If you know enough to get something a little bit upgraded, then go ahead and do that, but get started. And maybe, you know, a year or two down the road, maybe now it's time to upgrade. Like you think about woodworking, like there is a different tool for every aspect of woodmaking. Like you can do, like there's so many different types of saws that do this cut or an angle cut, or it can rotate, or you get some sort of Dremel thing, or you get like a table, you know. But meanwhile, like you probably have like two tools and they can do almost everything. It's just going to take longer, or you have to like finagle it and set up some different rigs and whatnot, but it's all the same tools. Or you can have a giant wood shop that has every single different tool. And if you're just starting out tinkering with wood making and you want to build a birdhouse, trying to build out that whole wood shop is absurd. Like just get like the simple saw, and then now you can start cutting wood and you can figure out what you want later.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like the tool will become obvious when you really need it. Like that's when you're in my gut, that's what my recommendation would be, is if it's not a no-brainer situation, then you shouldn't be getting that tool.
Let me ask you guys this then. What's the tool you can't live without I'll start off in cinema. What's the tool that like I can't even like function? I can't do a job. I can't do anything without this thing. And it doesn't have to be ours.
I mean, I tend not to use too much in the way of plugins. I haven't even really jumped into a third-party render. So that makes me think more like a feature that came out in Cinema 4D that at one point we didn't used to have, and now we do have it, and I can't imagine being without it. And I mean, like a simple, obvious one is just something like MoGraph. Like, yeah, before we had an array, and you could do an array, you know, put things around, or you could just like manually put a bunch of cubes in a grid. But as soon as you've added in a cloner, like no, not even the effectors, a cloner, it's like, oh, look, I can do this process so much quicker. It's still pretty much not anything you couldn't have done in some sort of really long manual way, but it's opened up a new gigantic, like just design space. And I feel like that's one of the biggest things for me that we haven't really talked about yet, is once you know what you're doing, there's a lot of tools that, it's like, oh, I could do it, you know, I could do it the manual way, or I can do it with this tool. But the tool enables you to start playing around. And MoGraph, I think, is a great example of that, where you, like, let me throw in a cube and clone the cube onto a plane. Oh, let's clone the cube onto a sphere. Let's clone spheres onto a sphere and then add dynamics. Wait, let's put dynamic cubes onto dynamic spheres and put an atom array on top of it. This tool's enabling you to do, you could have done any of those things in the past, but you're now doing it so fast that you can start thinking of things on a new kind of like abstracted level. And I think that's where a lot of our tools go in. And I've mentioned this kind of thing before, but like I love Transform, and there's some things I'd love to do with Transform in the future. But our tool there if you go and you spend maybe, you know, if you go and you spend an hour or two, you could maybe make a rig that does one of the things that Transform does, where it's like, oh, that's going to kind of split the objects apart in this way. But then Transform allows you to say, what happens if it comes from the left? What happens if it comes from the top? What happens if it goes twice as fast? What if the pieces fly out further than they used to? And we're doing this with a couple of clicks, and it's changing and updating the entire system. And then it's like, wait, not a cube, but a sphere. And it's all updating onto that. So we've opened up more design space to go and try, like, from here or from there, or I have to do this text 100 different times, but we can just change the text and it automatically updates all the way throughout. So we've opened up new design spaces that we wouldn't have explored if we didn't have this tool opening up the possibilities. But worrying about that when you're first starting would just be super crippling. But then getting tools later that just improve workflow enable you to iterate and change and explore.
I really hope that they make MoGraph multi-threaded at some point. That's a huge problem for me. Like, as soon as you get over like 3,000 clones, it's like unworkable. I really want to see that thing be faster.
Yeah, I think that's where things like X particles are kind of taking up the slack right now for those big object spaces like that. Mm-hmm. I would like that too. I think though, saying something that's already in the software, I think that makes sense as far as pricing and upgrading is concerned, but something like MoGraph that's been around a while, I feel like it's just a tool that's kind of there. It's like it came with the workshop.
Oh, no, I agree. You know? But it's more like, as an example of opening up a design space. Like everything that MoGraph does, you could have done already, but now you can do it so much faster, you wouldn't have even considered it.
Yeah, and that's really at the heart of a lot of the tools that we make and why they exist is anytime I did something in Cinema 4D more than once, and I found myself doing it on multiple projects, I was always frustrated that I couldn't, I was always frustrated that I'd have to rebuild it from scratch every time. And so I started building rigs for myself that sped this up, HDR rigs, light rigs, building a softbox so that I could position it the way that I thought lights worked instead of the way that lights came with Cinema 4D. And as I built these things, I realized other people can use these too. Like if I'm using them in almost every project, maybe other people can too. So for me, and I know this is biased, we sell products, but the reason they exist is because I got to that point as an artist trying to make something that was in my head. And I realized that I could speed this process up if I just had these tools. So I built them. And I think that's how I would recommend a lot of people think about their workflow. Not that you have to build them, but that you're going to eventually get to a point where you go, I don't want to do this every time. And anytime you have that thought, there might be a tool out there that could speed that part of the process up, whether it's textures, whether it's lighting, whether it's, and by the way, this also reminds me of another part of this discussion is a lot of times tools will supplement the parts of the software that I am not proficient in. In things like LightKit Pro, I actually do know how to light and that sped me up. But in things like modeling or texturing, being able to reach out to a texture library and pull them in makes me work faster because it's actually helping me with parts of the software I don't know. So I don't know if that's a part of this discussion, but I definitely think of tools as I guess that brings us back to what you said, Chad. It's either speeding us up or it's giving us the ability to do something we wouldn't be able to do in the first place. Right. Whether it's through lack of knowledge or like lack of software ability.
Well, I have an interesting perspective coming from other 3D applications and kind of seeing, you know, I was in Maya for a number of years and then 3ds Max for a number of years. So for me, when I came into Cinema, I was definitely aware of all the plugins and tools and whatnot. And now working at GSG, I have an even stranger perspective, I guess. But I think that the two tools that I think I can't live without and that I think are, you know, fantastic, one of them we make and one of them is just a part of Cinema. And the first one's a no-brainer. HDR Link is my favorite. I use it every single day, only because it it speeds up that process of just getting some lighting going quickly when I'm testing something or maybe working on a project. I just need to check a bunch of different looks. And the other one is espresso, because I find myself making little custom rigs for things that I do to do exactly what you just said, Nick. To if you find yourself doing the same thing more than once, or doing the same similar task more than once, and it's just kind of a pain, or you have the foresight to say like, oh, you know what, I'm going to be working on this job and it's going to require this, this, and this, and I know they're going to want to see multiple versions of that, then the ability to use espresso to build really simple job tools for yourself, whether they're rendering based or just scene organizational based little tools that you can make and then save for another job perhaps, is really changed the way that I work. Because in you can do all those things with in Maya using Mel, and you can do all those things in Max using Max Script, but I was never a scripting guy. Like, I was never a person that could, you know, just type code and like make things happen. I could cut and paste my way through some stuff, but it was never great. So when I started learning Cinema 4D and I looked at espresso, I was like, whoa, okay, so a visual programming language for expressions. Yes, this makes sense to me. I think in the first week I had built, I don't know if you remember this, but I may have told you this, Nick, like the first week I learned Cinema, I rebuilt a light kit very similar to what you have. And I also built another light tool just because I was like, oh my God, look at all you can do with this thing. And it was eye-opening. And so, yeah, those are the two things that I'm like, give me those two things every day and I'll be a happy guy. Yeah. Anyway, that's my two cents.
Yeah. I'll have, another stab at this, 'cause it can be frustrating early on. I think these questions come from the idea of, I'm just getting started. What do I actually need to get started? And whether it's cameras and whatever the angle is, whatever the metaphor we could use is, it's always best to get early when you're starting off early on. It's always best technology wise to never get the best thing out there. Especially if you're in a limited budget. What I always recommend to people is if you're just getting started, try to get like last year's model, try to get, you know, a basic version of Cinema 4D if you're just getting started, and start to spread the limited funds that you have into a bunch of different buckets instead of spending it all on one very expensive thing. So for computers, that means not getting the fastest chip, because usually the fastest one is only 5 or 10% faster than the second fastest one, but it's almost double the price, right? That always happens with these brand new chips. So if you just take technology down a notch, you could often get last year's models, or, you know, last year's camera models. Like, oh, this analogy works in a lot of different ways. When it comes to software, what I would recommend is obviously, you know, getting Cinema, getting the actual stuff that you need to get going. You obviously need Cinema 4D, but then go start to try to break it. So let's say you bought Cinema 4D Prime and not the full studio version. Go out and go try to break it and see where the break points are. And then go research how to fix that. Because what you'll find is maybe there's tools in upgraded versions. Maybe there's plugins you could buy to get around the breaking point. And it kind of goes back to the beginning of these thoughts, where you have to know what you're missing first before it really becomes clear that you need to fix it. So what I tend to see is the people in the industry that are doing this for a living, that have clients, that are actually working on this stuff and getting paid to do it, if they could find a tool that's $100, $200, $300 that saves them an hour or two of time at total, that's a no-brainer purchase for them, because they know that they could provide that value back to their client. And now they have a piece of software that they could do it tomorrow with. So tools and even faster hardware and all this stuff becomes much more affordable, obviously, when you have a business tied to it. So what I find is this is usually a conversation for people that are a little bit more on the edge or just getting into the industry. So I would say, no matter what you're playing with, this goes for your hobbies too. Like, and I have to take my own advice with musical stuff, or else I'll have a guitar, like a giant guitar collection, and not know how to play very well. That's the saddest. Like, that's the saddest thing, right? Then nobody wants that.
That's a lot of people, though, man. Like, a lot of people.
Most people with most things. Like, you look into something, and you're like, oh, that's cool. And then you kind of, like, it's almost like you're purchasing the fantasy of what you could potentially do with it without actually wanting to do that thing. Like, right. I'm going to buy all this, like, I don't know, the other day I was like, I really like electronic type things, but I don't know anything about it really. And I started being like, oh, it'd be kind of cool to like get one of those electronic board things. You start like learning circuitry and whatnot. Like, it's just something I'm kind of fascinated with. And I was like, you know what? Let me do a little research. And I found like a couple online versions of it that you could like build them all digitally. And I played with it for like 2 hours. I was like, I'm bored. I was like, man, I'm glad I didn't buy that physical one because I would have like, I like the idea of it. And like, I love the projects people do, but like, it's just not a space I can put my head in right now. But man, but there's so many beautiful things you can go buy right away and all the tools and get the soldering kits and all the wires and all the things. It's like, whoa. Like, should you be doing that? Should you be buying, getting your chainsaw collection just because you like the idea of a chainsaw? Meanwhile, you have a perfectly good axe that you have never swung a single time.
I definitely vibe with that. I've been in that position with many different things. I mean, music is definitely one of them. You know, I collect a bunch of stuff and I could always be a better musician. I think photography gets a bad rap for that as well. Everyone's got a...
Everybody's a photographer.
Yeah, everyone's got a $3,000 camera and, you know, just don't know how to set it up. And there's a lot of those things. But it reminds me of basically a... I don't know if it's a story analogy, just a little tidbit. Like, Eddie Van Halen could grab your crappy guitar setup, your like $100 Walmart special guitar setup, and make it sound amazing. The opposite is not true. You can't walk up to Eddie Van Halen's amazing $1 million guitar setup that's custom made with $1,000 pedals and $1 million sound system in an arena and sound like Eddie Van Halen because talent, right? Because hard work, because all the other things that go into this stuff that is not purchasable. So, you know, I always err on the side of get your hands dirty, get in and start breaking stuff. And very quickly, you'll realize the limitations. Then ask other people how to get around that limitation. There may be a really simple way to do it. There might be a part of the software that you don't know exists that they could put you to. There might be a plugin that solves it very directly. They might show you a shortcut around it. So that, to me, that's how I learn the fastest and understand where to put my money in the best place for the best results is to basically buy it at the last minute. You know what I mean? Like, get myself into trouble and go, oh crap, I thought I could do this. And then ask around and say, how do you guys solve this problem? And get some feedback and understand that you might need to upgrade your lens. You might, I'll say one more thing about photography and then I'll shut up because I have a lot to say about this. When I started doing photography, I bought I'll date myself. I'll give you the specs. It was $1,200. It was a digital camera. It was 4 megapixels. It was the first kind of affordable Nikon digital camera. And I just went out, started taking photos. I had a kit lens on it. Nobody recommends a kit lens, but it's very affordable. I just started going out shooting. And what I quickly realized was I could shoot in daylight all day, right? It was bright. I could focus. I could do all these things. But as soon as I went inside and tried to get a shot of my friend on stage at a show or my bartender friend, like a really cool shot of him like behind the bar, I realized everything was blurry. Every shot I took was blurry. So I started learning like, why is this happening? Well, I started learning about ISO and about sensitivity. So I cranked up my sensitivity and walked in and then I took another shot and I started to get less blurry photos, but they were still blurry. And now I had an extra problem. They were grainy because adding more ISO cranks up the grain. So in my head now, you know, I'm starting to process these things that if I were to just read the book about ISO or just read an internet article about grain, I wouldn't have experienced it in such a negative way that made me go forcefully fix it than if I just went out and started taking photos. So what did I learn? I learned, well, I can't, if I crank the ISO up too high, it's going to be grainy. And my lens, what I learned by asking questions was my lens was too slow. What I have is a kit lens that has a high f-stop And if I buy a dedicated prime lens, which is a word I didn't even know back then. Okay, what's a prime lens? Well, a prime lens is like a lens that doesn't zoom. And I'm like, I didn't even know this existed. So they tell me, go buy a 50 millimeter lens. It's $100 and you'll be able to shoot in lower light because of the wider aperture. But what are the trade-offs? Well, I don't have this full zoom lens anymore. You know, I started learning about trade-offs, but I bought this lens, put it on, and now I could take indoor shots with a lower ISO, with a shallow depth of field, which I didn't even understand. Like, oh, I get it now. You put a big prime lens on here and you get this really nice shallow depth of field. And you get all the blurry backgrounds and all that stuff. But I guess what I'm saying is I learned it by doing. I learned it by going out and bumping into the limitations and then asking people how they get around it. And to me, that's a much more like visceral way to go purchase something than like asking like the 50 things you need to buy up front before you get started. Because I think that's how you end up with a room full of guitars and, you know.
And you can't play Stairway to Heaven. Wow. Yeah, that is so true, man. There's like this thing where I think people just have this, and it's not necessarily, has nothing to do with graph motion design or anything like that, but like there's that obsession that people have with the objects that maybe represent a lifestyle that they wish they had, which is the whole guitar thing. And it's totally fine. I mean, if it's a hobby of collecting guitars, go for it. Do your thing. Like, you don't have to be an amazing guitar player to appreciate guitars. I mean, look at me. I haven't skateboarded since like 1997, and I've got skateboards on my wall still, only because I really appreciate the culture behind it, and I grew up on it. But yeah, I agree that approach of like, you have to run into some walls before you know how to create a door. Huh? What do you think of that?
Ooh. No, when you go buy these things, whether it's a plugin from us or X Particles or an upgraded version, like a new version of Cinema 4D, even like at all, anytime that happens, it should be a no-brainer. These tools are out there to solve your problems, not to give you another thing to procrastinate about. I think that's something I struggle with all the time. When I'm up late watching YouTube videos on how to produce like music like the Beatles, like I'm like, how do you make this tube mic sound exactly like a Ringo drum kit? And I realize like I'm watching my third video about how to get the Ringo drum kit sound, but I personally haven't played drums or recorded anything in a month. I realize I'm procrastinating. Like I'm doing all the exciting stuff that you're right. Like Chris said it, what'd you say? It was like the fantasy. I'm living the fantasy of making stuff, which is what I should be doing is turning off YouTube and like picking up my drumsticks or the microphone or whatever that version is for you. So I feel like technology can often become a distraction. But when you know you need it, when you know you need a plugin, you should be able to feel it and go, wow, this will save me so much time. I need this. And that's when you go buy stuff. Or I want to make the wah, wah, wah sound. What do I need to buy to get that sound? Oh, it's called a wah pedal. Cool. I'll go buy that. And now I can make the wah, 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 chicka, wah, wah sound.
And isn't that what we're always after when it comes right down to it?
How to make the watch.
Right.
Oh boy, Chris, we got to talk about cameras, man. We got to bring this offline. I want to know, I will give you the answer that you're looking for. Don't listen to these guys. Don't.
Oh boy, here we go.
Right here. I have one question to ask you, and then I will give you the camera recommendation.
I will say, I'll say, Chris, you already have a camera. It's called your phone.
I think I've taken that to the limit. I have taken lots of photos with it.
I am
100% ready for the next step of a camera to go run around and play with.
Cool.
Okay. Well, stay tuned.
I want to know what you recommend
for the recommendation, because I'm going to ask. We'll take this offline. I want to dig a little bit. I want to make sure
you're going to ask him a bunch of questions. Like
no. I'm not going to go overboard. Because listen, I get it. Like, this is the reason I love sites like Wirecutter or Smart. I think the other one's called Smart Home. They do all this research and all this stuff, and then they basically recommend the best one. like this is the best for most people. Unless you're super into all this stuff, just get this and you'll be fine. And I more and more, I just love that answer.
Yeah, wire cutter is awesome.
So I have a couple suggestions for you, Chris. I'm really excited for this. I'm ready. But then I got to see some photos. We got to, are you going to post a couple photos for everybody? Or is this an internal project?
I don't know. Just getting ready. Yeah, it was just general photos and I've got some trips planned and, you know, just get stuff. I need texture references, like a little bit of everything.
Oh, I'm so excited for this.
Alrighty. I might actually buy one too then. I need an upgrade.
Oh, we have a whole nother podcast we could do.
I still have a D5200, I think, which I hardly ever use other than to record, you know, GSG stuff because it's just so bulky, man. Like I just use my phone for everything.
Yeah, keep that practical in mind.
I'll tell you what, I shot I have probably 8 different cameras. Big ones, small ones, pocket ones. The last road trip I took, I did 100% iPhone as an experiment. I also got the iPhone 7 Plus. It's got the fake like portrait mode. It's got a really good chip on it. And I just kind of used it as a limitation at this point where I'm like, what can I do with what's in my pocket? And man, you can get an amazing shot with these new phones. It's
yeah. I was following your Instagram posts and I was like, damn, that does look pretty good for a phone. And that just goes to show you if you have think about these phones now are insane. Like I remember, like you said, your first camera, digital camera, was 4 megapixel. And I think, like, what are these now? They got to be like 12, right? I mean, I don't know. Well,
a lot of the big cameras are now 32, up over 40. I mean, they're getting.
No, like, I mean the phones. Like, what are the phones up to?
I think it might be 6 or 12 at this point. It's definitely, they were definitely, you know, you can't get the depth of field that you could on this Nikon. But the fact that in the my lenses. Pocket is a screen that's this big and a camera that shoots really decent for less than half the price of my first 4 megapixel DSLR is pretty amazing. So
it's already in your pocket.
That's why I don't remember who I was talking to about this, but I think maybe it was you, Nick. I was talking about this company Moment who, it's a really interesting idea. They started on Kickstarter and whatnot, but what it is they make really good glass, really good lenses for phones. And what makes them unique, and you've seen those detachable lenses for phones and they're all kind of janky, like they're like magnetic and they never really work that well. Well, they were smart. And what they did is they first designed a case that has a basically an attachment like latch on it for their lenses.
Oh, that's
so
smart.
So you buy their case and all their lenses fit onto the case and they're really good glass. So I'm thinking about buying a nice wide and maybe a telephoto of theirs. And they're like, you know, they're like this big, they're like about the size of a stack of quarters or something. And I mean, cause I've already got my phone on me all the time and my phone shoots 4K video. Not really well in low light, obviously it's a phone, but I mean, it's crazy what these things can do now. And I was like, man, I could either like buy a camera that I'll just put in a corner and never use because it's too bulky, or I'll get one of these cases and just keep a lens in my bag and then just bust out the lens whenever I want to take a nice shot. So I'll report back once I pull the trigger on that.
Well, let me add a little reach out to our audience. Just a couple questions for you guys. We really love this feedback, by the way, guys. Whenever we see stuff in the comments, we love engaging and seeing what you guys use. So I have a couple questions if you guys are listening. One is, what's a plugin or what's a part of Cinema 4D you can't live without? I think that's a really cool question. And if you were to buy like one plugin, what should it be? That'd be kind of a cool one. And second, who's got camera recommendations for Chris?
No. See, now you're going to overwhelm me. I don't want that. I want it to go to one person and say, what do I get?
I'll curate it. I'll look at them all because I'm a little bit out of the market. I want to make sure I'm getting you like the most modern version of what I think you need. But I want to hear everyone else's thoughts. Chris, don't look at them. I will send you an email with one link to it and then you can just go buy it. How's that?
Yeah, we'll have to take a look. I haven't purchased yet, but I do have the decided version from a couple other people's recommendations.
Are they trying to make you buy a Sony?
I don't even remember because I don't care.
Okay.
Wow. I just want a camera.
I sense that that wasn't where Nick would go.
Nope.
But I will say this moment, if you're listening, hook me up. I'll give you a review.
Oh, man. Well, this is a fun one. As always, let us know what you think about the podcast. We have show notes. I've been writing some notes down. You can see those on YouTube. Link up down below in the description. You can see all the links from today's show. We have, of course, the podcast up on iTunes. And thanks to everybody that's listening as well, no matter where you're listening from. I appreciate that. And all the reviews and all that stuff. I really appreciate everything that you guys do for the iTunes and for the podcast. Is there anything else? Did I end that too early?
Oh, no, good. I think we're good, man. Good show. We'll see you guys next week.
Oh, yeah, dude. See you guys then.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.